Can you feel the heat down in your soul?
I feel the heat down in my soul.
Can you see the heat there in control?
I see the heat there in control.
Can you feel it?
I feel it.
Can you see it?
I see it. It's Miami Heat. We can be beat. It's Miami Heat. It's Miami. We can be beat. It's Miami.
All right, welcome to episode number 19 of the Haha Hoops podcast. I'm your host, Ernest EJ Christian, alongside, of course, the editor-in-chief here at the HaHoops.com. Surya Fernandez, what's going on?
Just, studying Twitter nonstop, and if I have to take a bathroom break, I'll take my iPhone with me, just in case.
If you take another bathroom break, you might notice Luke Ridnour got traded again. Just saying.
what happens if I'm not on Twitter? And of course, something will go down if I'm not on it.
So always happens. That
it's like the Matrix. I'm just staring at it all day.
Yeah. Also joined here with one of the writers here at the site, David Ramil. Dave, what's going on?
Not much. Enjoying the draft, the free agency period, and everything that has been unrolling over the last few days. So it should be a good couple of weeks for the Miami Heat.
Yeah, let me ask y'all a question. What were you guys doing at midnight on July 1st? Where were you guys? Were you guys sleeping? You guys did the Popovich thing? Or you guys were actually on Twitter like I was, like looking at the tweets? What were you guys doing at midnight?
I think we were all looking at Twitter religiously, weren't we?
Yeah.
That's, yeah, like I said,
we're so nerds. Yeah. We are such nerds, dude. Popovich, meanwhile, I'm going to sleep. No, it's funny. Like, I have a quick story. Like, I was like literally 12:01 on Twitter, and literally 5 minutes into the process, Anthony Davis scrolls up. Oh, what? Where did this come from? And then 4 minutes later, Kawhi Leonard's deal came in. Like, okay, we have to hot start. So, yeah, it's been that way for day one, not just within the NBA, even with the Miami Heat, a lot of things going on. First off, first priority out the way, in principle, the Goran Dragic is back, 5 years, $90 million. I think this is a value deal. He took a little bit less. Like, we all assume that he'll get at least $100 million plus. He got $90 million. I think that's very flexible for the Heat going forward. Sir, your thoughts on the deal? You like it?
Yeah, I mean, you don't give up two first-rounders and then have somebody walk away like that. And we saw, even without a training camp, without Bosch, you saw the effect that Dragic had, the way he pushed the ball up the court, the way he finishes at the rim. I mean, the way he uses his body, it just adds such this dimension to the Heat's offense that we haven't seen. And he's the best point guard that they've had since Tim Hardaway, and somebody that can really help Wade should he resign, and a perfect complement to Bosch and Whiteside. And it's exciting to see him on the in transition with Winslow as well. So I think it's a great deal. I think, yeah, maybe at the max at 100 plus, maybe not, but he gave him a little bit of a discount, I guess you could say. And he apparently was concerned with, you know, how that was going to help fit in Wade at that, you know, we don't know even what Wade wants really, what the Heat can afford him, but as it stands, I think it was great for that first day to lock up Dragic, and now move on to Wade.
And by the way, we'll save the Wade. I know people listen to the podcast are going to say, "Oh, let's talk about Dwayne Wade's situation." We're going to save that for last. Let's save the rest for last, real quick. You know, let's get down to business first with Dragic. David, you and I have been going back and forth. You know, I'm a big fan of Dragic. That I told you that they had to get this done no matter what. And you agreed also to your thoughts on the deal. You like the deal?
I do. I guess I was a little bit teased by that report that had come out a few weeks ago that Miami was preparing an offer of north of $80 million. And I guess in my head, I had hoped that maybe they would be able to keep it less than 90 just to provide even a little bit more flexibility. The more I see comments from people outside of Phoenix or Miami, ironically enough, just the two cities where Dragic has played, everybody seems to think it's a little bit too much money for a player like Dragic who doesn't have the kind of hardware or maybe the points per game averages that a lot of big name point guards might have. So I was a little concerned, but I did like what he did here last year in Miami in limited action and with a team that was broken down by injuries. So overall, I'd say that I really do like the deal, and I love Dragic's game. I guess I had just hoped that maybe it would be a little bit cheaper. But on a scale of 1 to 10, I'll give it a 9. How about that?
Oh, yeah. And I told you, too, also, like, if he didn't sign this deal, he would have gotten the maximum 4-year offers elsewhere. Maximum 4 years is $88 million. So he would have gotten those offers out there, too. So this is actually a low-end 5-year deal for him. This is actually a bargain considering what a max is on a 5-year deal. You know, so, like I said, I love the move. I mean, as Sirius said, you have to sign this guy. You know, you gave up two first-round picks, obviously, for him. I mean, it is what it is at this point. And to be fair to him, too, also, I know he doesn't have the hardware, but think about it. He started his career up in even Houston.
Yeah.
Okay. He wasn't even – I don't think he was a starter.
He wasn't.
Okay.
No, right?
Not for a while. And then he played behind Steve Nash for a couple years in Phoenix. So – it was kind of hard to stand out, and when he finally had a chance to stand out 2 years ago, all he did was make all third all team NBA, third NBA
right.
team 2 years ago.
Right.
How you phrase that? So we've started to see Dragic become more formal as a point guard. To me, he's a top five assist point guard in the league, but just based on production, you know. I mean, right. the guy I believe 2 years ago was third in the league in paint points behind Blake Griffin and LeBron James. Are you kidding me? This is a point guard,
yeah.
You know. So.
I saw that a tweet by Ethan Skolnick that he compared it to the quarterback situation in the NFL. That, I mean, now the position is at such a premium in the NBA, you kind of have to have a high-level point guard just to be able to keep up with other teams. You've got your Westbrooks and you've got your CP3s, you got your Kyrie Irving type players. You know, those guys, I guess, represent the upper echelon somewhat. And Dragic might be on the lower end of that scale, but he's still a really good player. And I think part of the value in getting a guy like him for 5 years is that he's also relatively low mileage because, like you pointed out, he didn't play a whole hell of a lot. So he's 30, I think, or 29, but he's a young 29.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a lot of miles on his legs, so that's going to benefit him as the contract moves on. I'm just thinking of it from that perspective of people outside of Miami that are saying, you know, what the hell is Miami doing? They're risking losing Dwayne Wade, and they're offering all this money up to a guy like Dragic who doesn't have the kind of recognition or statistics, et cetera. So that's the only thing I'm thinking about when I consider the whole overall value. But I do like what he brings to the table.
Go ahead, Sorry.
I like the deal, too. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. And if you can get him with Wade – And that's a solid starting five. And then you have Winslow coming off the bench like that. And you have the benefit of Deng opting into the $10.2 million player option. And you still have that, you know, you still clear that next season off the books, Deng's contract. So you only have a few players under contract. I think Dragic, McRoberts, Bosch, obviously. We'll see what happens with Wade. I think they're primed for the future. And they have. I think that's a good point that David makes. Dragic, I think, has only been in the playoffs once in his career. I don't think that's a knock against him so much as the kind of teams that he was on. He was good in that playoffs as well. He had a great game against the Spurs. So this is somebody that has a high basketball IQ and somebody that can push the pace. I think they need to refresh that offense a little bit. And just somebody that you can build a team around, and it's a great starting five.
Am I wrong to think that, right? Okay, let's assume Wade's back in the fold next season. And I think I've been pushing this narrative even last season when this trade initially happened back in February. Am I wrong to saying that this is a top five starting five in the league?
Well,
I think it is.
In the league? I mean, I guess that depends on whether or not Aldridge signs with San Antonio. I mean, that's a pretty good starting unit over there.
It's pending. It's pending. But, I mean, looking to the start, I mean,
Oklahoma City. I mean, that's a plus over there. I mean, clearly, you've got three potential all-stars with Westbrook and Durant and Serge Ibaka. I mean, Cantor is a good option as well. I'm trying to think. Other than that, I don't know that there's other teams that really have. Cleveland.
Right. I mean, I say, well, obviously Cleveland, I mean, you know, I think once they figure out their two-guard situation, though, which I'm going to assume Shumpert will be the starter next year, but if you look at the Miami Heat's roster, like, this is Wade's back. Dragic is a top six-point guard in the league. We can say that, right? Comfortably say that? We can feel good saying that? Top sure. six-point guard in the league?
Sure.
Okay. Dwayne Wade's still top three or four shooting guard in the league still. Okay, Luol Deng is very productive still. I don't care what some Heat fans say about Luol Deng. Oh, Luol Deng is whatever. No, Luol Deng is very productive on both sides of the ball. Chris Bosh is the best two-way power forward in the league. Okay, top five power forward in the league. We know about Whiteside, top side right now. You know how he was last season.
Right.
You look at that based on position. It makes it, to me. I look at that as very formidable going forward.
No doubt. Sir, I'm kind of curious because, you know, Ernest, Haley, and I have talked about it in previous podcasts, but what's your overall opinion on Luol Deng? Because I know he's been somewhat beleaguered by Heat fans over the past season with Miami, and I'm just curious what you see in him and what your overall position on him is.
I think somebody that he was, you know, when engaged on the offense, somebody that could, that was a dynamic type of player, the player that could move off the ball. It just, I don't know if he knew really what his role was during that season. I don't even know if the Heat knew what to do with Deng. So sometimes he kind of lost in the shuffle. And I don't think it helped the, you know, nonstop injuries, I don't know how many different starting lineup changes. Then you got a team like the Warriors that had no such issues. And of course, maybe that's not the only reason why they won the championship, but they had so much stability, and somebody like Draymond Green can really just grow into a new role like that and have Iguodala come off the bench. But he didn't have that kind of luxury, nothing close to that. So I don't know how good of a player he can be in his second year with the Heat, but I don't think it was something where, oh, well, Deng it was just not a good player for the Heat. I don't think that's the full story right there. But somebody that is definitely a good counter, somebody that doesn't need the ball in his hand, that can get those kind of garbage buckets. And we saw the value of having somebody like Iguodala that is that kind of glue guy that makes everybody around him better. And that's Deng. And he's a guy that he can defend the other team's best player, like a LeBron James or, you know, somebody else like that too. And that also helps, you know, with the mileage on Wade or anybody else that would have had to guard that player. So a solid player to have on both ends. And it's just for one more year anyway, and then you can take it from there.
Right. Not to mention also the forgotten thing also with the point guard situation. I call it the Bermuda Triangle of point guards, like with Loris Cole and Napier and Chalmers. That was horrific last year. They couldn't get Deng involved when they wanted to. So
yeah, and you don't want Deng handling the ball and attacking the rim.
It's not his game. I agree.
But somebody that can cut to the rim and Dragic can find him for an easy bucket.
Bingo.
Sure, and
bingo.
not even getting into the fact that he's just a good locker room presence, somebody that can mentor Winslow as well, just a professional, somebody that you want to have on your team. I think that he's a solid addition. Yeah,
Dave, you and I were saying that all year long. Like Deng's a guy that you have to get involved. Like he's not a guy that's gonna create his own shot like a LeBron or a Durant. He's a guy that you get him involved. He's a cutter, just a slasher. So if you got a point guard that's gonna get him involved, and you saw, I mean, granted there were moments where Deng was a little bit disengaged, but you know, but you saw when Dragic and Deng were clicking. I mean, Deng, his production picked up toward the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I looked into the numbers there, and I wanted to see why the vitriol, because there was a whole hell of a lot of it. I mean, I know Heat Twitter can be overreactive at points, as any kind of fan base.
You think?
Yeah, but, you know, they were really upset about Deng in particular, I think based on the fact that his contract was worth as much as it was, and I did look into it. I mean, and there were some games there where he was just really struggling, and I don't think it was injury related or anything like that, but you'd have games where he put, you know, provided 25 points, maybe 23 points, and then he'd be, you know, missing in action over the next three or four games where he'd score that much over the course of that period. So he'd score 4 points, 5 points, 8 points, somewhere around there, and in a lot of losses there were performances from Deng where they're, you know, he was very lacking, let's say. So I think there were some concerns there, and I know it's all part of the continuity and the injuries and everything else, and it affects him. But then there was also those comments at the end of the season where he didn't really sound appreciative of his role, as hard as it was to define. He didn't seem like he really liked how he was being used in Miami, mostly as a standstill shooter. Like, that wasn't the strength of his game, according to him, although in reality it was. I mean, he was a good corner shooter. He shot, I think, 35% from 3-point range. I mean, he was solid from long range, so you'd have to say it's something he does very well, and he did it very well last season, but he just seemed a little upset about it. So I was just curious to see, you know, if maybe he had any insight about his role or anything along those lines. But, sir, you brought up a good point, though, in comparing him to the Golden State Warriors, and that brought me to another question. What do you guys think about the possibility of him coming off the bench like the Iguodala role now that Winslow is in the fold? I know it's a lot of pressure for a rookie, but is it possible that Winslow could have that kind of, you know, Harrison Barnes type role in Golden State?
That's actually a good point. Go ahead, Soria.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a lot of things with having both of those guys in the fold. And remember also Winslow, you know, he can be a shooting guard too, so you could play him behind Wade as well. And unfortunately, things like that can happen where injuries, you saw with the Cavaliers that Love got injured, but then Tristan Thompson stepped up and arguably was the better player for them in that system that they had in the playoffs. So sometimes they don't even have a choice. So I'm not saying that, you know, something like that could happen where, you know, through the course of the season, Winslow outplays Deng and Spoelstra makes that switch. But it, you know, it's certainly possible. It's something that is on the table. I think right now, I think it just makes sense for Deng to be the starter and have Winslow be that versatile player that everybody says that he is, and he says it himself, and to spell Wade, because I think if anything, Wade is the concern there to limit his minutes and keep him fresh for hopefully a deep playoff run.
Yeah, we keep saying Wade is always present. I like it. I like the good juju here. Like, we say Wade's back, so that's good. But I like the idea, though. Like, Dave, that's a good point. I didn't think about that, actually. And, you know, it's funny. I don't know if it'll happen, but I can imagine it right now as you're constructing that idea. I can imagine a scenario where Winslow, you know, maybe not to start of the year, but maybe, say, by December, January, that he's clicking, and then the sports like supposed to start Winslow, get Deng off the bench. Deng still productive as an Iguodala role. I mean, I could definitely see that. Let me say something now. The six-man role in the NBA is still underrated, if you can believe that. It's still an underrated role, but it's so valuable.
Sure. I mean, you got a guy like Jamal Crawford, who's such a top scorer for the Clippers. I mean, that's been his role for years on a number of teams. I think he's really, you know, at the upper level. But even J.R. Smith had that role for a while in New York. I mean, I know he's not a good comparison there, but certainly it's changed a lot over the years. So, and it's a vital one. I think you need a guy like that who's capable. And I think when you're looking at the Winslow-Deng potential, you know, Winslow's a guy who's known mostly for his defense, although he is a very good scorer. But maybe it's a lot to ask of him in a rookie year to take up a big scoring lead for a second unit. And so maybe if you bring him as a starter, he provides great defense, often guarding top players in the league. And then Deng, who's more of a natural and capable scorer as a veteran, maybe he'd flourish on the second unit. So it's just something to consider. But there's also James Ennis there. I mean, he's got some minutes available as well. I think he should take a step up this season. So, I mean, I know a lot of people knock Miami for their depth, but I think it's a very good team right now. And I mean, there are potential pieces that could be added over the course of the offseason too. So it looks like a very good squad.
So are we happy that Deng opted in? Are we all happy about that? Are we okay with the Deng opt in? Because I thought he opted out. I thought he was going to opt out and try to get a multi-year deal somewhere else.
Yeah.
I think it's a good deal simply because it's not like, oh, they would magically have $10 million to just spend elsewhere.
Right.
They probably have to replace them with that mid-level exception. So I think, as you guys are talking about, that you can mix and match that rotation. That's a good problem to have for Spoelstra, to have those options, something that he really didn't have last year when injuries, you know, robbed him of that kind of depth. And then you had to kind of go on the fly and maybe pick up Henry Walker, Michael Beasley, and see how those pieces fit. Hopefully they stay healthy this year. I can't imagine them having any worse luck than they did last season. And to have Bosch too, who's such a special player, who's so essential to the Heat's offense, have him back in the fold. And you don't have to have Winslow have so much pressure to score. He can be that kind of glue guy, like I was saying about Deng. They can have similar kind of roles too.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. Reversing course for a second, we kept teasing his name, Justice Winslow. I mean, I'm still in shock a week later that he fell in our laps. I mean, it's insane because, like, the reason nobody around here in Heat Nation, we want to call it, spoke about him because we did not think he'd fall. We all thought he'd be between 4 and 7, maybe. That would be the lowest number. And even when they went to Detroit number 8, I thought, okay, well, Stan Van Gundy will probably take him. I mean, we'll at least get Stanley Johnson. And then when Stanley Johnson went to Detroit, I'm like, hold on. This can't be happening. You know, I think I remember texting David actually about this. Like, no way this guy's gonna fall in our laps. No way. And then it happened. I mean, that's just like sure luck for the Heat. You know, I mean, I don't know. I'm just amazed at how that happened. And he's the guy that the Heat really need. He's a guy like that. A guy like him, his attitude, you know, his body, the whole nine. He's a guy that the Miami Heat need right now in this moment.
Right.
So how happy you guys? 1 to 10. How happy you guys about Winslow being here?
44.
Yeah, a no-brainer pick, perfect fit, great attitude, somebody that actually fills a need, not just best player available, and then you figure out right. like what you do with him. It was just luck that the Heat kind of deserved, and you know, it's not earned, it's given, you know, maybe in other cities, but in this case, this is a good pick. And I think he's happy too to be part of a team that isn't rebuilding either. That a team that wants to win and wants to go to the playoffs. That is willing to spend to put the right pieces around him for the future. I think next year is a very exciting time where all teams are going to have more cap space, but Miami is an actual attractive destination for free agents. You know, and I feel, you know, kind of almost bad for what the Kings did last night, desperately trying to carve out some cap space. And it's like, you don't even know what free agents would want to actually sign with Sacramento. Miami will always be a destination. Nobody thought that Dragic would also show up, but he indicated that he wanted to play in a city like Miami, and Pat Riley made it happen. So it will always be a fluid situation with Miami where they can always attract free agents.
Yeah. Have either of you heard about why Detroit bypassed a guy like Winslow? I know that you can always just chalk it up to Van Gundy having a preference over Stanley Johnson, but I mean, for as long as I can remember in early mock drafts, Justice Winslow was supposed to be a top four pick, like EJ said. So I'm just curious as to what it was about Stanley Johnson.
I have a theory. I think a lot of teams, and this is where the Colley Stein thing came in also too, at number six.
Right.
I think a lot of teams went for need as opposed to, you know, getting the guy they think can do a lot of things. Like, you know, I knew it was odd when Colley Stein went to Sacramento. I was like, wait a second, this guy was projected to be number 15, and now he's number six. You know, and I think in the Kings' case, because of the whole Boogie Cousins situation out there, and not knowing if that's going to be will he be on the roster and come sure. October, November, you know, they wanted to go for need in case that he won't be there, so you have a backup plan.
Well, that makes sense, and though, you know, you're right, but I mean, a lot of leagues are kind of skewing towards having these rim protector types, so I you know, that's a good fit there. I mean, and he had been climbing on a lot of boards, but my thing is, you know, specifically Stanley Johnson, you look at him, athletic, good shooter, he can drive the ball.
I think that's what Stan Van went for. He went for right. athletic.
He's like Winslow 2.0, though. I mean, you had a lot of people had Winslow who was also a good shooter.
That's the thing, though. I think Detroit wanted to go for that specific need. Winslow doesn't stand out for everything. Winslow doesn't stand out with one thing. Winslow is just a glue guy, you know, a guy who does everything right. You know, so I think Stan Van went for, okay, I need a shooter and the athletic guy. So let's go with Johnson. With Winslow, there's nothing that stands out. It's just everything is a package.
No, I got to disagree there. I mean, he's like a 40% shooter from 3-point range. I mean,
I'm not disagreeing with you saying. I'm gonna say what the mindset probably of those GMs out there. This is why these GMs are terrible. This is why they're still on the bottom of the conference every year, and this is why they'll be back here, you know, back in this situation come June next season, you know, drafting again because they don't know how to draft properly.
Yeah, and then of course Michael Jordan. You know,
thank you, greatest player of all time. Yeah, thank you. Good job, Michael Jordan. Good job.
The ghost of Kwame Brown must have like been haunting him that night, and so he chose he chose Frank Kaminsky yet again. I mean, I don't understand it. And bypassing what, like 4 or 5 draft picks from Boston?
Six draft picks.
Holy cow. That's ridiculous.
4 first rounders, 2 second rounders. By the way, it was also leaked to that Boston offered Miami that same deal. You know, Pat Riley told Ainge to F off again.
Yeah.
No. So, thank you, Jordan, once again. Appreciate it. Great player of all time, but you know, terrible at his role as owner. Sorry.
It's unbelievable.
I have no problem saying that either. Just for the record.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, Winslow. We all hype about Winslow, and I think he's a great. I mean, at worst, he'll be Caron Butler. At worst.
No, I mean, I like the comparison too, the fact that he was 10th and he dropped a lot like Caron Butler did in 2003. I mean, it's a nice comparison there, and there's a good precedent over in Miami already, so I really appreciate the way it all played out. I think he's going to be a great fit here for years to come, so it's an exciting moment.
Yeah, and he makes Dwayne Wade more dangerous now, because now, as Sergio was saying, now having that guy, a rotational guy like Winslow, now Wade can take games off, scheduled games off, back-to-backs off, because you have a guy right ready in tow to step in there for a game or two. You know, because like I said, this is a perfect situation for Dwayne Wade. This is why Dwayne Wade, I don't know what his thought process was going to situation, obviously money and all that, but I think seeing the roster and seeing his career, you want to extend your career to beyond 2, 3, 4, 5 years. This situation right now Miami has in play now is presents itself. It's kind of like San Antonio-ish, like Tim Duncan. You know, they brought guys around him to monitor his minutes, and they have guys that can fill in time for him. The same situation. And I think Wade's seeing that now.
Well, you teased it, definitely. So you might as well.
Well, I'm teasing a little bit, but we're going to tease it, but that's all I'm doing until we get to that point. That's all I'm doing is teasing it.
I think it just makes sense. I don't see where else he would go, and it's clearly, we're seeing Pat Riley wants to continue building on this team, not, you know, trade everybody away and start from scratch like maybe the Celtics did a few years ago. So, okay, I get why maybe Paul Pierce had to move on from that situation, but you're seeing that. I mean, yeah, okay, they got a little bit of lucky with Hassan Whiteside, but just the very fact that they wanted to trade for Dragic means that, you know, they want to win now. They're willing to put the best talent around Wade. And kind of like what you're saying with Winslow here, with that starting five in place, you have some, you know, interesting young talent there with Ennis, with Tyler Johnson. This is a good team. This is a team that can compete with anybody in the East and can do damage in the playoffs. And there's players with plenty of playoff experience on this team. So
yeah, I
just don't see why Wade would go elsewhere. And if he's going to take a discount to go to another team, why wouldn't he do that for the Heat? It's not a logical thing for me to believe that at this point in his career he's going to move on elsewhere. That's my feeling right now.
I agree with you 100%.
So do I. I mean, I think if anything would have driven him away, though, it's that whole, and maybe it's being overblown somewhat, that perceived disrespect from Pat Riley with a low ball offer or something along those lines. I mean, maybe that's being blown up needlessly, but I think if anything would have driven him away, maybe he just felt like there was an irreparable tear there between him and the front office. Logistically. Right, go ahead.
No, I just going along with what your point is, you know, I think that he were hoping for a Dirk Nowitzki, Tim Duncan type of discount. But if that's not the case, okay, then go back to the bargaining table and try to reach a compromise. But I don't think it's something that is something where they can't reach it, and it's something that is irreparably broken, the trust between the two parties. I think it's mutually advantageous for them to seek a resolution on that and just move forward and just finish out his career here.
Hey, I mean, it's common sense to me. I guess we're in the Wade thing. We'll stay with the Wade thing. I guess we're off and running with that. Cords on Mike Wallace. He's mulling over two proposals right now. Dwayne Wade's in the Bahamas, living a good life with LeBron and Carmelo and Chris Paul and their wives. So he's far, like, for all we know, this is probably a formality already, and they're just, you know, waiting it out a little bit, you know, because they have until July 8th to announce anything anyway. So, but from what I've read from Mike Wallace at ESPN.com, he's looking at two proposals here, which one is a near max for 1 year, which then he'll be a free agent next season. And then another proposal I'm seeing here is a lower average multiple years. So, but I'm curious to say, though, if, like, you see guys like Paul Millsap getting 3 years, $60 million, and guys like that, a lot of these contracts that, you know, ballooned, obviously, but they look bad now because they're all set up for the future, for, you know, the new TV deal coming in next year. Does Dwayne see that and think, wait a second, hold on. Should I be getting paid at least that much? I mean, I don't know. I wonder if that's the holdup at this point now. I'm just curious.
I don't know. I mean, a lot of people were, like, freaking out. I mean, it's kind of like what David says. That there's a whole spectrum of responses, like, on social media from Heat fans. And I get it. They're a little paranoid from what happened last year. But to me, I think it's a good thing that he's in the Bahamas. He's not LaMarcus Aldridge scheduling meetings with other teams. I mean, he's not really speaking with anybody. I haven't heard anything, at least.
No.
You saw Montellus moving on as well. We've seen other teams snatching up other shooting guards. So if he's some sort of plan B for other teams, so be it. But right now the Heat are actively engaging in talks with him, so that's a good thing. So, again, I don't really see where he's going. That would be a great fit. And the fact that he's vacationing right now, yeah, it's just not, he's not really actively talking to teams. And I don't see where there's this real concern about him leaving. I think it's whether he wants to take that max, maybe 1 year deal or a multi-year deal for a little bit less. But I mean, if you're going to be, And I get it. Teams are selling for billions of dollars, and there is a repeater tax that hangs over the Heat and Arison. And I understand from both parties where they're coming from, but it's not like Wade is like hurting for money. I mean, he's got endorsement deals that most players in the NBA don't have. So whether it's a matter of a few million dollars, just sign the deal and just let's just move on, and then. You're going to be set up for the future with the Heat organization. They take care of their players. I feel the same way about Haslam. Juwan Howard. Tim Hardaway has moved on to the Pistons, but he also worked with the Heat. This is a rock solid organization. I just don't see why it's going to be a matter of a few million dollars to leave this team and start over somewhere else.
I mean, I understand both sides too, but at the same time, I also. You know, in Dwayne's case, I mean, I guess a lot of ego. This is where the ego is really hurts. Like, if you see the payroll and you see that Goran Dragic has nothing to do with Miami until February last year, and he's already getting paid $90 million, you know, for 5 years. And I mean, and you have to at least think about it and say, hey, what am I worth then? I mean, for 12, 13 years on this franchise. So I can understand just the initial, you know, feeling like I'm disrespected and thing. But, you know, at the same time, he has to understand, too, also, these guys who are getting paid this money, Bosh, Dragic, you know, and eventually Whiteside, if he signs next year with the Heat, these are the guys that are going to be doing all the heavy lifting while you're missing games. You know what I'm saying? You're not... It'd be one thing if you were missing 20-plus games a year. You know what I mean? So that's the counter-argument now. It's like, okay, yeah, we want to pay you, but at the same time, you don't play X amount of games a year. These guys will be doing heavy lifting while you're missing back-to-backs or you're missing a game here and there.
I think it's just a matter also that, right.
Go ahead.
And Ira Winderman pointed out that he wrote an article several days ago that it really hasn't been that much that Wade has sacrificed, maybe $6-7 million these last couple of contracts. And I think it's wonderful that he did that. But I think it's also a testament to how the Heat have always built around him with top talent. If you're a great player on a bad team and you always have a max contract, but you don't go anywhere in the playoffs or never even make it, that's another thing altogether. That's the most important thing to you, the money side of it. That's great, but the Heat have always tried to get the best players around Wade. Of course, the big three, but getting Shaq to come here as well. Even when he was a very young player, the Heat, you know, got Lamar Odom on a restricted player contract. They got him away from the Clippers. So they've always tried to build the best team around Wade, and that's helped Wade's legacy, of course, with three rings. If that's the end game here with the max deal right now, that's great if you can get that, but that's also going to significantly hamper the Heat's ability to spend down the road. And if you're all about winning championships and being a winner and Wade County and being the man down here in Miami, then I think that holds more weight than whether you have the biggest contract at the time for the Miami Heat. But, you know, like you said, there are good arguments to be made on both sides of this. And I certainly don't, you know, begrudge him for wanting to get the most money, because this probably would be the last contract of his career. So I also get that from that standpoint as well. But whether or not Dragic is making a little bit more money or this and that, everybody knows this is Wade's team. He's the leader. He's going to be the one that gets the most cheers in the starting lineup. That's just the way it's going to be. Now, if he wants to walk away from that because of a matter of a few million dollars, then that's his prerogative. That's his right as a free agent. So we'll just have to see how it goes.
Thoughts, Dave?
No, I think we're all in agreement that this is the best place for him, and I think we all see him being in a Heat uniform next year. I mean, I guess, you know, we all hope that he would take less money, but ultimately, you know, you're right, Surya. It's his prerogative as a free agent, but this is still the best place for him, and so I expect him to finish out his career here as a member of the Miami Heat.
Yeah, me too. And I think, like I said, I think they'll figure it out. If he wants $60 million over 3 years or maybe, I think they'll find a number somewhere between 48 and 55. And all cool heads prevail, and then we move forward. Yeah. It's that simple. So when do you guys think that he'll officially announce this thing?
Well, I mean, they can't formally sign it until next year, right?
Well, do you think they'll will know more about in principle by tomorrow, later tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I think by tomorrow, right? I mean, I think a lot of people had expected it to go till the end of the week, so hopefully that'll be the case. I don't want it drawing on too long just because that makes everybody nervous. We certainly saw that last year, and we don't want that to be the case again, so. I think, you know, the flurry of activity on July 1st is one thing, but, you know, that deal didn't get done, but we all assume that's going to happen sooner rather than later. So hopefully it'll be by tomorrow.
By the way, breaking news, Tim Duncan's back next year. Just for the record.
In San Antonio.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yay. One more year done. I love Timmy, man. Love Timmy. I'm sorry. Sure. Go ahead, guys.
it seems like he had his mind made up, for at least the last several weeks that he was going to opt out. So it's not like there's that much to discuss as far as the numbers go. So I expect it to happen within a couple of days. I think Pat Riley was aware of Wade wanting to opt out because of that report that came out that his agent kind of went to the media and spoke about this. So I think both parties kind of know what the situation is. So I don't think anything really has changed. I think if anything, it's helped that Deng opted in and Dragic has returned, but not for the max. I would expect it to happen relatively soon.
That wasn't the case, though, right? I mean, when the season ended, didn't he go on record as saying he was going to opt in and he was going to stay with the Heat for the $16.1 million?
You know, I do not recall that from you know, being there, you know, when Wade talked. I think that was the expectation. I don't know if people put words in his mouth. I've read that before, and I would have to go back into my audio archives.
Yeah.
But I don't remember him saying it. I remember Dragic definitively saying that he was going to opt out, but that he wanted to stay in Miami, that he liked it. I don't have a recollection of Wade clearly saying that he was going to opt in. I think that's what people thought. But I could be wrong, and maybe if I have some time after free agency sort of ends and I have time to get away from Twitter, maybe I can double check that. But I don't recall ever saying that.
Well, I did hear scenarios. I don't think he said it, but I think there was, you know, you know how we us writers are. We will always throw out scenarios out there. And I think a few writers actually threw out scenarios because of the TV deal. Well, you opt in for more year and then wait to try to get the new max, which would be in 2016. There were scenarios out there, but ultimately that didn't happen. So, but there were scenarios thrown out there back in April and May. So that I do remember.
Yeah. But I think it would have, you know, opting out was kind of a surprise when he started talking about that and started being a little bit noncommittal. I think it was during the exit interviews. And that's when he started to really talk about whether or not he was going to do that. But before that, yeah, it just made sense. You would think that he would opt in, get, what was it, $16 million. And then keep that cap flexibility for next year when the salary cap goes up so much. But that's not the case. He wants to sign a new deal now, and that's what it is right now.
I'm actually looking at a tweet right now from Ira on April 17th where he says, Wade confirms that he is bypassing his opt-out for this summer. So that must have been right around the postseason presser.
Yeah, actually, that is true. Yeah, no. You know, it's funny. You're going to kill me. I thought you were talking about Dragic still. Sorry about that. Wade. I was thinking about Dragic for a second. There was actually rumor that there was actually multiple sources that said Wade was on opt-in from a year. That is true. Ira said it. It was actually I heard Ira say it also on WQAM a couple times too. I mean, but then again, you never know. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. You still go back on your word,
right?
You
no, know? But that's what brings up that point I had made about there being this perceived gap or disrespect between the front office and the player. because, you know, he tells reporters at the end of the season everything's hunky-dory. Yeah, absolutely, I'm going to opt back in. And then all of a sudden you start seeing that report by Barry Jackson, you know, whether it was leaked by Henry Thomas, you know, Wade's agent or not, whoever knows. But apparently there's this huge gap and maybe even a little disrespect and a low-ball offer from the Heat, and you start hearing these numbers about $10 million for 3 years, and all of a sudden you start to think, well, maybe Pat Riley hasn't done a pretty good job of handling the situation. I mean, you know, we saw what happened last year with LeBron, and, you know, we all heard what happened at the end of this season in the press conference where he challenged Wade to be out there on the floor. You know, it just starts to kind of feed that idea that maybe there was an issue at play here. But it looks like it's either been calmed down or maybe it was overblown. Who knows for certain? But I guess all signs point that he's going to be re-signing with the team.
And maybe all of the above.
It's possible. Yeah.
All of the above. All happen. Last piece of this, let you go. You guys go. JJ Barea, a.k.a. LeBron Stopper. I'm sorry. That, to 5 years, you know, 4 years later, it's still funny to me. I'm sorry. Rumors of him coming to Miami. Now, we heard this morning that the Mavericks are trying to make a one last effort to resign him. JJ Barea, do we like that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, to me, when I see that, I'm thinking, okay, well, that's a move to possibly move Chalmers and move some salary over, you know. That's why I interpret when I see JJ Barea's name, you know, being linked to the Heat. Surya, you think this is a good fit if it does work out?
Well, yeah, it really depends on what they're going to do as far as it goes back to the Wade thing, too, because how much total salary will they have and will they need to move some veterans? I've heard Bergman, Chalmers, even McRoberts. I think that would be a mistake. I think you need to see what McRoberts can bring to the table. They really had a chance to really fit into the team. How much faith do they have in Shabazz Napier? And no, right now he's going to be in the summer league squad. So really, what is it that they want to do as far as the salary goes? And then is Barea a worthy replacement for what Chalmers can bring? Because Chalmers, say what you want about him, but he did serve that role as a combo guard, off the bench. And then you put him back on, and then you put Norris Cole as a starter, and then there was no real set role for Chalmers, and I know he expressed some frustration about that near the end of the season. So what is it that they want to do as far as salary goes? And with Barea, yeah, I think he's a great player. I think he's, I know some people knock him a little bit, but I think even from a marketing standpoint, I think it's a great idea to have to have him here. I remember the fans here were so excited about having Carlos Arroyo a few years back. I know they would love it if Barea was here, and he has ties with Miami as well. So I think from a marketing standpoint, not so much on the court, I think it's a good signing. I think they'll sell plenty of jerseys. And I think, yeah, I think he's definitely a decent veteran to have off bench.
But having said that, I think we're all in agreement that Chalmers is a better option than Barea as a point guard.
Yeah, that's why I include that. First and foremost is what they want to do as far as the financial aspect of it. Now, if they want to get him because he's going to be coming in a little bit cheaper, I don't even know if he wants to sign for the exception or what his asking price is. That's what I need to understand first, that part of it. And I think that has a lot more to do with it than simply saying, okay, we want Barea because we think he's a better player than Chalmers.
I spent a lot of time on this podcast last year defending Chalmers. Dave, you remember this?
Yeah.
Defending Chalmers on this podcast. I think my wife and I are the only people that actually like Chalmers right now in Miami, to be honest with you. Seriously.
No, I think there's a cult of love hating Mario Chalmers, right? I mean, I think that's the feeling. I mean, I can't speak for everybody, and I'm sure everybody has a unique experience as a fan, but Mario Chalmers is the player that you love to hate or hate to love. I mean, it's frustrating watching him because he's capable of greatness, and then he's just, you know, on the next play, he's going to throw the ball away or pull, you know, foul somebody needlessly or do something absent-minded like that. You have peaks and valleys with him throughout the course of every game, and so that's why you just kind of just, you know, shrug your shoulders and say, well, that's Rio. And, you know, that's just all you can do, you know. But he's still, you're right, Surya, you know, he played that role excellently last year. There was a good couple of weeks there right when Wade first got hurt at the start of the season where he was a starter and then he was a sixth man. And I mean, he played that role really, really well, and you kind of expected that to be the case for the rest of the season. Then he had a drop off, and then there was lack of consistency there. But I still like to see him there as that kind of role, and I think he would bloom from it. But you bring up a good point about Napier, and that you don't know exactly what to expect out of him, and I guess he was a little bit of a disappointment last year as well. Did we, you know, you're obviously a lot more plugged in than we are, but did you ever get a clear understanding of what led to Napier's demotion? Because, you know, you saw him kind of on his way up, and then almost as precipitously as he was climbing, all of a sudden he starts dropping, and then all of a sudden he's not getting any playing time. He's, you know, optioned off to the D League, and only because of injuries does he come back. Did you get any kind of clear understanding? Was it just a lack of defense that he wasn't, you know, clearly understanding what was happening on the floor at times? What was it specifically?
Yeah, I think it was all of that. I think it hit a rookie wall. I think it was the defense. I don't think it was getting the consistent minutes that I think Spoelstra never really had a handle on that guard rotation. Because he also had Norris Cole in there as well. And also I think all three of them were very inconsistent. So I think it was a matter of Spoelstra, you know, trying to mix and match and finding that right combination. So the thinking was maybe to send Napier and get him consistent minutes with the Skyforce. But I also heard maybe that he needed a little bit of an attitude readjustment, but I didn't really see anything like that, you know, from the limited time that we get to see when they're practicing and before the games and things like that. I didn't see anything like that he was any sort of problem on the team. But I think it was all of that, really.
Was there a sense, and I kind of got this feeling, and obviously never confirmed or anything like that, but, you know, as he was climbing up and getting more and more playing time, there seemed like there was a brief window there where it made sense for him to possibly start, and then he was kind of passed over in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
Was he a little pissed off, maybe, you think, or disappointed that he didn't get the starting role, and then he kind of started to sulk, and his performance kind of suffered as a result?
There could be. I mean, he was very good in the preseason, and that first month, he was scoring like double-digit points for several games in a row. But, you know, it's definitely an interesting theory. I don't really have anything substantive to say that that's definitively what the case was, but you have to remember with point guards, they do take a while to develop that NBA game. Just off the top of my head, I'm just thinking of like somebody like Chauncey Billups, that some point guards just come right in and are studs, but then there's other people that do need several years maybe to get adjusted. And even somebody like Goran Dragic, you know, he was a bench player for a long time before he had his chance. So I just don't think that maybe Napier can really realistically expect to just jump into a team like the Heat and just start already. So I don't know if that was really a realistic goal of his. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll see if he can continue to develop. But the shot has to be more consistent. And just physically, I don't know how he'll be able to defend some bigger guards out there in the NBA. That's kind of always going to be an issue for him. I don't know how he can overcome that.
Right. Well, the good thing now with him is that he'll be able to develop now because the Heat right now. I mean, if this is the roster we're going into at training camp, you know, he'll definitely be the third guy on the depth chart anyway at that position. So, if anything, he'll have time to develop.
So definitely, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he has potential. I mean, a lot of those young players have potential, but then you also have somebody like Tyler Johnson that can handle the ball too. So, we really have to see what this final roster will be, or at least at training camp.
Go ahead.
I was just curious, Sergio, you're going to be there. You know, anything you're looking forward to as Summer League gets set to start on Saturday? Obviously, we want to see Winslow and Napier and Ennis and Tyler Johnson, but anybody else or anything else that you want to give the fans something to look forward to in Summer League?
I'm curious about this Josh Richardson kid because I didn't really see a whole lot of college basketball. Definitely didn't see him at Tennessee, but I mean at 6'6". Somebody that was averaging more than, I think it was like 2.1 steals per game, and somebody that's improving his 3-point shot as well. And they seem to be really high up on him because I don't recall a second round pick having his own press conference and they're selling his hat and jersey on the Heat store. I think they're really high on him. I really want to see what he can bring to the table. And I mean, yeah, if he can develop into a solid player, then that's somebody that they could really use off the bench, somebody that they could play behind Wade. And he kind of would, best case scenario, fill in all those questions that we have about Chalmers, about Napier, about, you know, maybe Tyler. What can this kid bring to the table? I'm very curious about Josh Richardson.
I think that's a good one to look forward to. Yeah, I mean, he seems like he's ready to contribute. His interview seemed like he's a pretty self-aware guy, and I am looking forward to that. And I think you're absolutely right to bring up the point that he might stick around. He might make more of an expected impact. And I think I saw that the Heat had him rated as a first round talent as well. So obviously that bodes well for him here.
This was the record too. The Heat have until February to shave salary. So before they get hit those taxes, so they can still. Mm-hmm. Let's see, Richardson has a great summer league. He maybe doesn't make the roster, but he's good enough. And then the Heat have offers for Chalmers and old Birdman and make space for him. Who knows? So this is definitely the wheels turning here now with that situation. So, sure. I want to touch on one more thing before we get end this podcast. And this is the whole thing of, you know, speaking of the Heat shaving salary. You know, a lot of thought has been, obviously, Birdman and Chalmers, but a lot of thought also has been whether the Heat should explore trading Josh McRoberts. I'm against that. I think McRoberts got a raw deal last year. The injury stuff hurt him. I thought when he was starting to figure it out a little bit, he was very effective, and he got hurt again. Mm-hmm. I think that McRoberts can be a big-time player with this roster next season and beyond. Your thoughts?
Yeah, okay. I mean, I see why people would think that, you know, they might want to move him and do 5.6 million next season. That's the second year of his 4-year contract. But I, as you said, I mean, this guy is—he's a playmaker, but he's a forward. So to have somebody like him and have him play alongside somebody like a Bosch, for example, we really didn't see that just yet. And to have him with a training camp, healthy, in shape. Because I don't know if he really came into training camp in good shape, because he had like a toe surgery, I believe. Right. So somebody that never really got going. I think he injured his back on the very first play in training camp. That's what Bosch said. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what Bosch said. That was the only time at the very beginning of training camp that the Heat were actually healthy. So even with McRoberts just coming back, playing a few games, trying to get back into NBA shape, and then he gets injured again. So right. I think you really need to see what he can bring to the table. If you want to trade him down the line, fine. I mean, I guess so. But why not see what he can bring to the table, and somebody that can play off the ball. But most importantly, I would love to see him down there with the ball in his hands, back to the basket, surveying the court, seeing who's cutting to the basket, and he can get that ball to
he's
that player.
Great passer.
Great passer. Yeah. Yes. And an underrated offensive player as well. And more size in the front court on defense too. So I think it would be a shame. It would be a shame if they traded.
Right,
him now.
I agree with you. I've compared him to Boris Diaw.
I think that was the expectation. I think that was the expectation, right? When we still thought that maybe LeBron would sign, and we had just been cut up by San Antonio in the finals. I think that we were looking to implement a team that was much more similar to what San Antonio was running. And so I think you have a guy like him who is multifaceted. And I think that was the goal, right, when they brought him aboard initially.
Absolutely.
But a number that always stands out to me is 34. And that was the total number of minutes that the projected starting lineup of Norris Cole, Dwayne Wade, Luol Deng, Chris Bosh, and Josh McRoberts actually got to play. 34 minutes, and that's it. You know, with all the various injuries to all those starters, they were never on the floor for a prolonged period of time. So, and I think that's the concern for a lot of fans, is that you don't know where you're going to get out of McRoberts. And you also kind of think from him, maybe there's a real high ceiling in what he was like in Charlotte before he signed with Miami. But then he could also revert back to the norm, the kind of journeyman player that he was in L.A. and Portland and Indiana, a guy who just never really fit. I'm personally optimistic that he's going to be more of the high end of his ceiling rather than the low end. I think he's going to be a good fit there off the bench, and I think he can create a lot of offense. And I think you know, his size certainly allows him to be much more of a multi-dimensional, multifaceted player. And you saw with Golden State, the more guys like that that you can have that play number of roles both on offense and on defense, it just gives you so much more options, so many more options, so much more versatility. It's nothing but a plus to have guys like that. That's a little bit why I never brought it up before. It's a little bit why I was turned off about the whole Barea option, because at 5'10", even though he's generously listed at 6 feet tall, he's kind of a liability defensively.
Very generous.
Yeah.
Very
he's,
generous.
Yeah. He's a liability defensively. And so you saw with Golden State, you know, having a tall backup point guard like Sean Livingston there, I mean, that was really an advantage for them. So you kind of hope that maybe Miami would skew more towards that, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think he's better off as a six-man, seventh-man role, honestly, on the team. I don't think he was kind of a starter. I think him playing behind Bosch and having like I said, like same with Chalmers, having defined roles.
Right.
You know, Mario was great at that 1-2 spot. You know, Winslow be that 2-3 guy. McRoberts be the 4-5.
Right.
I love this roster.
That all changes because, you know, now you have Whiteside there. You didn't have him at the beginning of the last season, so you didn't know what was going to happen. Right. All of a sudden, you have a real set starting lineup, assuming Wade comes back, obviously. But you have a real set starting lineup, and you've got a real good bench there that could include Mario Chalmers. It could include Chris Anderson. It could include Josh McRoberts, Justice Winslow, you know, Ellis. I mean, Ennis, rather. That's a real good team. I mean, that's a team that's potentially 9-10 deep. And I think a lot of people overlooked that because of the injuries and the way we fell off and the success that Cleveland had with LeBron. And then a lot of people erroneously tend to think that Miami may not be as good without LeBron James here, but I think it's still a really good lineup, and you have to give credit where credit is due.
Yes, it is, and we'll continue following free agency as it goes along. We got a lot more to go to with Dwayne Wade, the pending decision. But till then, Sir Fernandez, where can everybody find you on Twitter and beyond?
Where can you find me on Twitter? SuryaHeatNBA. Surya Heat, SURYA
Heat NBA. David?
At DRAMIL13.
And me at EJ Christian number 7. And we'll, until next time, later.
Can you feel the heat down in your soul?
I feel the heat.